Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. The Hannah Arendt Center's 17th annual fall conference is Joy, Loving the World in Dark Times. It will offer a crucial lens for finding meaning and connection amidst today's fractured world, bringing together notable speakers and diverse narratives and insights at Bard College in Annandale-on-Hudson, New York. The conference is a timely exploration of joy as a powerful force and a vital conversation around fostering resilience. Roger Berkowitz is, of course, a wonderful WAMC panelist, but in his day job is professor of political studies and human rights and founder and academic director of the Hannah Arendt Center for Politics and Humanities at Bard College. And he is back to tell us all about the conference. Hello, Roger. How are you?
It's a joy to be here, Joe.
It's a joy to have you.
Yeah, I thought of that.
You know, we talk about it a lot on the panel where sometimes the subject gets heavy and panelists will sometimes as a sidebar or in sometimes quite seriously say, God, we really need the joy. We need something to talk about that brings us out of this moment. And I guess that's ultimately where this all comes from, doesn't it?
Yes. I mean, you know, the Hannah Arendt Center, we deal with politics. We've had conferences on rage recently, a couple of years ago. We have had conferences on the crisis of democracy. I mean, we do a lot of that kind of stuff. And about a year ago, as I sat down and thought, what should we be talking about in 2025? I said, look, you know, on the one hand, we all just need a little joy in our lives. So let's just start there.
Right.
But it's deeper than that. I really do believe that the problems we're in right now comes from the fact that we all very much know what we're fighting against, but we don't know what we're fighting for. This, to me, is the problem of our age. It's a problem that Hannah Arendt identified. I'm just, you know, here as her humble messenger. What are we fighting for? And you know, what you're fighting for can't simply be breaking the system, right? I mean, I think Donald Trump and people around him really do believe that the system was unjust. And they're not all wrong. I mean, most people I know think the system is unjust, too. And they thought the system was so unjust that at this point they're willing to break it and cause immense pain and suffering for many people in order to free themselves from it. Now, I also think that the people at the top of the Trump administration are doing so because I think it's very profitable for them. And the amount of corruption in politics right now is extraordinary. And it's now not even news that someone gets a $400 million plane as a gift or, you know, makes $5 billion in cryptocurrency, you know, exchanges or whatever. The point is that it's very easy to say we don't like this, we don't like injustice, we don't like tyranny, we don't like, DEI, we don't like discrimination, we don't like racism. We all know there's a lot of things we're against. But what are we for? And I really do believe that's a much more difficult question. You know, my colleague Sam Moyne wrote a book a number of years ago called The Last Utopia about human rights. And he said, look, we no longer believe in communism. We no longer believe in liberalism. We no longer believe in capitalism. We no longer believe in socialism. The only thing we believe in is keeping people alive, human rights. It's the last lowest common denominator utopia, and it's not a lot. And Arendt would say that human rights is not something that we should believe in because keeping people alive reduces people, human beings, to animals or plants who are also alive. There has to be something more. There has to be something meaningful in our lives. And that's what I call joy. Joy is, you know, it's the feeling of being part of something bigger than yourself.
Does the joy, fighting for something, and we have to figure that out, does the joy come as a result of the fight at its conclusion, or does the joy come as you are together fighting for what it is you want?
It's a great question, and no one's asked me that. I think it's both. I mean, I think there is a joy in winning. I mean, let's be honest. Donald Trump is a joyous man. He's a mean man at times, but one of the reasons people like him is he's so happy. Not happy. He's joyous. He loves it when he can stick a knife into you and twist it. And he enjoys it. And there's a certain infectiousness, I think, to his followers. I mean, one of the things I remember, you know, when I was even 7 or 8 years ago, or first time he ran, whenever that was, you know, people went to his rallies and reported on them, and they said people are joyous. They're laughing, they're singing, they're dancing.
Yeah.
And he has brought a kind of joy into politics. His joy is in winning. And there is joy in winning. You win a war, you celebrate in the streets. You know, your team wins the World Series. I know you're a Phillies fan. Maybe it will happen. You go and you have a parade, and there's a joy. I'm a Mets fan. I don't get that so often. So I think there is that. But I'm, and I don't want to discount that because I think winning matters. But there's also a joy in having a higher vision or a meaning. I'm, you know, the Jewish philosopher, it's Yom Kippur tonight, so I'll mention Spinoza. Baruch Spinoza described joy as the feeling of moving closer to what we most desire, even if that end remains unreachable. That's not winning, but that's being in a tractor beam and feeling like you're on a mission, that you have a purpose in your life. And that's joyous too. And that's what I have more in mind, because I think winning is joyous, but I think winning, it doesn't matter where you're going. I think we need to actually also reflect on joy and what is worth pursuing as a dream, even if we're never going to get there.
In putting this particular conference together, what is it that you wanted to... Because you're looking at all facets of joy, and the speakers that you have collected are really incredible, and the work that they have done, which as you've just illustrated in the Trump example, have again many facets of joy that is on and will be on display.
Thank you. I'm glad the speakers really touch you, and we've put a lot of effort into it, as we do every year. You know, I'll just mention a few. Is that all right, the way to
Absolutely.
Talk about it?
Yep.
You know, two of the first people I invited, I invited the poet Ilya Kaminsky and his wife, Katie Harris. She can't come in the end, but she'll be there in spirit and played by a wonderful actress, Ella Dershowitz. They're both poets, and Ilya has written a couple of amazing books. One called "Deaf Republic," about he's largely deaf, and he's from Ukraine, and it's about the war in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And Katie has written a wonderful book about her struggle with cancer, and they have spoken in public, and she's written this poem where she talks about it, about the importance of finding joy in pain and in horrors, in the war, in cancer, and how you joy can carry you through. And so I heard them present together at the beginning of thinking about the conference, and I said, I need you guys to come to my conference. And they were very excited and said they did. And so that idea of how art can take tragedy and turn it into something meaningful and joyous is to me at the center of the conference. Another figure who will speak in that vein is the wonderful choreographer and dancer Bill T. Jones, who's not only a friend and a former colleague, he was at Bard for a number of years, but he's a lover of Hannah Arendt, and he's actually been I run a Hannah Arendt reading group that meets every Friday online. Bill has been almost a nonstop participant in that for almost 10 years. And he knows Arendt intimately. And so, you know, but he is someone whose work, whether it's about AIDS or about racism, is about as hard-hitting and, you know, and unrelenting in its pursuit of pain that I've ever come across, and yet is infused with joy. and through the body and the access to the movement of the body, one somehow finds joy amidst the horrors. And you know, so I'm just thrilled that Bill will be there to talk about that. You know, two other people that I invited very early on. Well, Teju Cole is coming, and Teju, I'm sure many of your listeners know, is an extraordinary writer, photographer, lecturer. He's spoken at our conferences before. And Teju, you know, again, looks at the world with unflinching honesty, and yet his talk is going to be called Operation Lightness, and he has an ability to find beautiful moments, whether it's in photography or in writing. So I think that's really important. But, you know, I mentioned sort of transcendence. So I knew I wanted religion to be part of the conference in some way. And Matthew Crawford, who spoke at our conference a number of years ago around his book, Shopcraft is Soulcraft, is one of a number of leading American public intellectuals who's publicly converted to Catholicism in the last 5 or 10 years. And, you know, including our vice president, we should add. And I think that there's something to this. People are looking for a kind of guide or meaning. People are feeling lost in our world. And there is a religious revival going on many different levels. And Matt Crawford has written about, you know, the joy of surfing and finding the right wave, and compared that to the joy that he finds giving himself over to God. He'll be speaking with Anthony Kroenman, who's the former dean of Yale Law School and has written a book recently about the importance of Judaism in his life. And in the final chapter on joy and the joy in Judaism, he contrasts him with his mother, right, who, you know, was an atheist who largely thought, you know, religion was, you know, something you didn't have to spend a lot of time in. And he says, you know, we need the joy. We need the faith that comes from it. I'm not a really religious person. I will be in temple tonight for Yom Kippur and tomorrow. But I thought it was important to bring in that conversation and to think about it in that way. Music, right? I mean, if poetry is one and religion is another and dance is a third. I mean, it's interesting. We do have a lot of artists at this conference. And and so Jeremy Eichler has written some, is one of the top classical music critics in the country. He's written a book on sort of the importance of music during the Holocaust and the kind of music that people in the camps played and also people in Germany played and how music functioned to provide one of the questions is, can music as an act of joy save us at dark times? And he'll be in conversation after he talks with Leon Botstein, the president of Bard, but also the conductor of the American Symphony Orchestra Now, guest conductor of the Jerusalem Philharmonic, and one of the great humanists and musical thinkers of our time. There's a number of poets coming. Ann Lauterbach, who is a wonderful poet, and is going to be talking about difficult joy, right? And Shane McRae, again, an extraordinary poet, who teaches at Columbia, along with Wyatt Mason, who's a great novelist and writer. So we really do have a wide range. It's about 20 people speaking over the 2 days. And at the end, there'll be a play about Hannah Arendt. It's a fascinating play. I should at least admit and add that it's written by my wife. So, but it's set in the 8 days in which Hannah Arendt was arrested in 1933 by the Gestapo and interrogated, in which she befriends the Gestapo agent who interrogates her and puts herself in his hands. Mm. And he saves her. And there's a kind of joy in that as well. So, I'm very excited about this conference. It's like all of our conferences. It's bringing people from all different walks of life, different perspectives together. There's not a thesis behind it. There's an inquiry, and it's not an academic conference, as you can tell. Most of the speakers are not academics, we'd love you to come by. We'd love people to come by.
You in the materials online, when you talk about an inquiry and some of the questions, what is joy? Is joy possible without a belief in God or some higher power? Are the humanities and the arts a meaningful pathway to joy? And then you ask a question that I think is so interesting, which is the cultivation of joyfulness in dark times an abdication of responsibility?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that comes from...
Like that survivor's guilt,
yeah.
Sort of, right? I mean, that's...
You're absolutely right. I mean, there's a poem that has... A poem that I've written about many times because it speaks to me.
Yep.
On die Nachgeborene, on to posterity, I think is the most common English translation by Bertolt Brecht, right?
Yep.
And it's too long to read the whole poem, but can I just read a stanza
please,
or two?
Please.
Truly, I live in dark times, right? This is written in the 1930s in Germany, right? Truly, I live in dark times. An artless word is foolish. A smooth forehead points to insensitivity. He who laughs has not yet received the terrible news. I mean, you know, survivor's guilt, right? If you laugh, if you have a smooth forehead, aren't you a bad person?
Right.
And he says, what times are these in which a conversation about trees is almost a crime? For in doing so, we maintain our silence about so much wrongdoing. And he who walks quietly across the street passes out of the reach of his friends. I've always loved this poem because it raises this question, right? Of should we in dark times, you know, do we have to act? Do we have to be, you know, people who man the barricades, stop outside ICE offices? And maybe we should, and I think we should. I'm not arguing that we shouldn't. But is there also a place for looking at the trees and listening to music and exploring what most moves us? And part of the argument that I'm making, at least, again, there's not like one central thesis, but I guess if there's a thesis to the conference, it's this, is that I think that simply acting without having a center of joy in your life won't work. I think you have to also deeply know what you love and what inspires you if you're going to be an impactful actor in the world. That doesn't mean you shouldn't act, but it does mean that we also, even if we're actors, we need to make some space and time for reading poetry, for having dinner with our friends, for teaching, which is what, you know, I think what gives me joy, right? I love having dinner with my friends and talking. I just wrote a book on friendship that I just finished last week, so I'm very excited.
Congratulations.
Friendship is one of the core joys of my life. But when I really think about it, teaching, when I see a student start to get something and their eyes light up and they get excited, there's really nothing more joyous for me.
Right.
And I think we all have to know what brings us joy and hold on to that, especially in these kind of times.
And sometimes it is there. We just have to identify it, that it is bringing us joy.
That's true. And I think we have to be reflective about it to some degree. Yeah. Because I think when we know what gives us joy, we can begin to know what matters in the world, right? You know, what matters, you know, why is the attack on immigration something that infuriates me? On the other hand, why is the many-year refusal to deal with the problems of immigration something that infuriates me? And I'd say that they both do.
Yeah.
Because I do believe deeply in playing by the rules, and I do believe that that every country and every people needs to have something to fight for as citizens, And you can't fight for something, a life as citizens, without excluding people. It's just the way the world works. You can't have inclusion without exclusion. And I think too many of my students and some of my colleagues forget that, that inclusion presumes exclusion. On the other hand, I'm a fundamental believer in neighborliness, and that when there are people who are living amongst us and working and having families and writing poetry, you don't knock down their doors, you don't wait in courtrooms and pull them away from their families because they've done nothing wrong except build a life here. And I find this repulsive. And, you know, neighborliness, friendliness, but also living in an orderly society that I believe, you know, requires the virtues of inclusion, which means we have to have rules. Those are things that I find joyous and meaningful and I will fight for. And I think that in order to understand where you stand, you need to know what you love.
The Hannah Arendt Center's 17th annual fall conference is Joy, Loving the World in Dark Times, and it's happening October 16th and 17th at Bard College. You can find out more information about the event by going to HAC, which is Hannah Arendt Center, hac.bard.edu, to find out more information about the 17th annual fall conference. Roger Berkowitz is professor of political science and human rights and founder and academic director of the Hannah Arendt Center. Always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you very much for being with us. We'll be covering this more, and I look forward to doing that with you, and also, of course, be welcoming you back on the panel.
Thank you so much, Joe. And I just want to reemphasize, it's not something to be afraid of. It's not an academic conference where you're going to be bored with long lectures.
You'll be okay.
You'll be okay. And if anyone out there would like to come and join, just come to the website, hac.bard.edu, and we'd love to have you join us.
Absolutely. hac.bard.edu. Roger Berkowitz, you're the best. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Joe. I really appreciate it.
We'll be right back after this.
Yep.